this aspect of preciousness that often gets associated with belonging to a diasporic dialogue where it's your identity that is expected to be very dear to you, and you almost get pressurized to defining it in some way. And for you, you've also spoken about your Britishness while growing up, but for your parents and for Nim, they had this history of Africa. So they came from a viewpoint of already knowing that there was a difference in identity. But for you, you were also struggling with trying to be British while growing up because that's what home was. Mm-hmm. But there was never this feeling that you were allowed to have.
Sure.
And how much of it do you end up rejecting or pushing away from when someone tries to impose this onto you?
The first part, I talk about your preciousness and the idea of South Asian identity. You know, I grew up in East London. I grew up with a mixed group of friends from so many different communities. And of course, there were people who were South Asian, but I found myself not being drawn to kind of being segregated within that world because of my identity. I was interested in other people and their lived experience and how they navigated their days and with their families. And I think that's more to do with the idea of Britishness or what Britishness is. I think we were all dealing with this idea where we had these kind of multiple identities, you know, Britishness, Jamaican, somebody might be Antiguan, Indian, Pakistani, Afghani, and then you got and then all of that's all thrown together, and you're trying to work out as a young person anyway, where do you belong in all of this? Now, this idea of holding on to this preciousness of South Asian identity. You know, I think, and certainly I would say, judging by what you said about my parents and Nim, like, I think immigrants, that's a weird word, immigrants, that, isn't it? My parents or Nim's parents, whoever they came here, this idea of holding on to something of the past or their roots and almost nurturing it. You're going to lose something if you don't. And then that position changes in the sense that if you hold onto it too tight, then how do you grow? Because you're so much caught up in this kind of, I want to protect something here that's for the future. And but you're not willing to let go and also take on board what else is going on in the culture you're living in. I was sent to Gujarati school. I probably lasted about a month there, you know, because I just didn't care. You know, I just didn't see it as being important. Or, you know, as a young guy, I wanted to go live and be with my mates. And learning Gujarati wasn't really important to me, as it was to my parents. And maybe in retrospect, I should have learned to read it, but I could speak it. But even if I didn't speak it, would it matter? I don't know, because the identity changes. So it's a hard one. But I completely reject the idea of kind of holding on to one's identity purely for the sake of some kind of nostalgic notion of holding on and investing in the future.
This in a way extends into your dialogue as an artist and a photographer as well, where it's about you looking at your practice first. And as you mentioned, it's about the people and the narratives that you create around them. Mm-hmm. And then if that work ends up leading into a dialogue around identity, it's alongside multiple parallel perspectives that one experiences every day. For instance, that comes in with your ongoing series of Nim and other stories that centers around family. It moves beyond this need to define nationness. And it's where somebody can look at that and identify with the everyday, can identify with family, with relationships. And there are elements such as that image of the home temple, which you have, that reads into identity, but it doesn't stop over there. That's so much more
to it as well. Yes, I love the fact that you picked up on the home temple, because that's a very recent addition to the series. And I shot it like a year ago, that image. And I was just going through the work. And I was like, oh, maybe I should put it in there now. And the only reason I want to put it in there is because I went, it's my mother-in-law's mandir. Because all the other work in there, it's got nothing really about South Asian diaspora or being South Asian. It's just about being a family, about the kind of ups and downs the loves and hates, the norms that we will go through. And my inspiration from that, for that work, came from people like Doug Dubois, from Larry Sultan, you know, a little bit from someone like Chris Anderson, who are just documenting their families and their day-to-day lives. Now, I find a problem. The people who are looking at this work, who are in the, I would say, in inverted commas, industry, is their expectation for me to photograph sari lead-clad women, you know, doing temple worship and, you know, all this other stuff that's kind of exotic about the kind of South Asian experience in the UK? Well, this is what I am doing, is the South Asian experience in the UK. You're not going to, you know, what I find patronising is that the expectation that we have to show some kind of life that fits into someone's box of what it is to be a person of brown skin living in the UK. I don't need to show people nothing about that. It's got nothing to, I mean, look, you know, it's such a small part of my life, you know. You know, if I was to say, like, with Nim, she doesn't wear a sari every day. You know, she worries about whether her trainers or her shoes match her trousers or something, or Sen, you know, I photographed Sen. I'll show you, when I get a moment, I'll show you these new pictures. He just literally put braids in his hair. That's a young kid who's being influenced by his friends who are West African and the kind of Latino culture, you know, because he's got Colombians at school who braid their hair, and he's been taken by that. That's got nothing to do with anything about this idea of identity. It's got to do with identity of him as a human being. I hope that when it is shown, people will look at it for what it is. It's a story about a family. That's it. And it's about one person, in a sense that it's about that one, like, it's called Nim and Other Stories, because Nim is the integral kind of narrative thread, the thing that holds the thing together through it. And that's purely because of my idea of her beyond being my partner, my girlfriend, my wife. It's about her, this individual person who has this immense ability to have fingers in many pies.
And taking off from this idea of family, you'd also mentioned there is this notion of wonder that you had with what it meant to be Indian, and that perhaps came from this bias that you faced growing up in the UK, but also where it was this notion of looking for your roots. And you'd spoken about how it was different when you came to India, because looking in India and photographing in India had nothing to do with identity. It was being able to know that you were a human being in that moment. And the sense of belonging and not belonging was something that became very strong, and that led you into working more over here as well in Bombay. In this process of catching up, there's this nostalgia that we spoke about a little earlier. You tend to slip into it because there's this lost time where you want to hang on to what has been passed on as a generational way of what your roots are, of what India is. But then when you see it, you need to let go of this romanticized notion of how people are looked at.
At the beginning, in terms of growing up in the UK, it was really hard, in the sense that, you know, you are dealing with these, you know, multiple things of identity, where you fit in, how you fit in, are you British, aren't you British? You know, and like, I think in the microcosm of East London, I felt British. I'd go places, and we talk about the countryside. I'd go to the countryside, and it's fear. Like, you'd be stared at, you'd be looked at, you'd be called names, and you just felt like you lost the beauty of a place, because all you were concerned about was that idea that you weren't accepted. Now, so that's one facet of it. Now, the other facet is what we talked about right at the beginning, the idea of forced identity, about having to accept an identity that's kind of pushed onto you. Now, that, as a young person, you start romanticising these different facets. I think, you know, the journey has been so hard with India, Because, you know, I came to India first in my working life as a photojournalist. Obviously, I'd come travelled with my parents there, but my exposure to the country as a working photojournalist was very much through the eyes of a Western photographer. And you look at my early work, it's so classically Western, the gaze. I think my experience in Mumbai kind of really changed up a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, it's been, you know, the project Mumbai Temple has been 3 to 4 years, and the problems it threw up to me were very much along the lines of how do you walk away from pictures? That was the most, in funny sort of way, that was kind of the essence of the project, you walking away from pictures.
Emotion that you were fighting.
Oh, because yeah, oh, yes, yes, a, yes, yes.
And you said you moved away from photojournalism because it meant putting aside emotion to be able to photograph in a certain way.
Mm.
But perhaps when you started working on your personal projects and on these, there was another kind of emotion that you needed to set aside.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Well. Yeah, yeah. No, I think, yes. Do you know what? I think you've, yeah, again, I think you hit it on the head. I think it's such a, I think emotion and, you know, this want of love for a place and you're trying to connect with it. And I think the hard part is that, you know, that part is that, you know, what emotion do you set aside for that kind of clarity of thought, you know? And the balance of that emotion, I think, is important as well, because the photographs I made are resonance. They're emotionally resonating from a place, but it's about channeling. Maybe that's the right word. Maybe it's about channeling the emotion into a place rather than reacting to an emotion. It can be a really bad photograph, if that makes sense, but it can be a really good photograph because it kind of like doesn't need the norms expected in photography to carry it, to support it. The viewer, the audience, has to work harder.
I think also, when memory comes in some way, and that's something that you've played with in Memoir Temporel, where it's this play of the real and the perceived memory and where they're embedded. And it ends up being a manifestation of what one may have created in their minds. And what the outcome is at that point of time as well. So the outlook ends up being a way of how you remember something.
I think Memoir Temporel is a really, for me, one of the kind of hardest and most interesting bodies of work I've made, because it's very much staking out new ground for me in dealing with the points that you just made there. The hard part more is, how do they relate to my experience of that place, of Bombay? Because certainly the memories, the ones I remember with clarity, are more about those kind of journeys I made with my parents in that place. But the difficulties are the perceived ones, because where did they come from? And They're not necessarily true, you know. This idea that's been brought up in my head. And so then how do you then translate that into a body of work? And I think that's the harder part. And I think the thing is that, you know, when you look at Memoir Temporel, the leap and evolution in practice for me is coming to terms or the balance of understanding that there's going to be a constant battle between, and I've got to say it directly, NRI and Indian in me. Where do I belong? You know, is the glass half full, half empty? And maybe that's the thing, is finding that balance within that world of this romanticized motherland that doesn't exist. It's here, it's in your head. And this place that you're meant to belong to, and yet you are a Brit. I'm a Brit. I mean, I'm a Brit. People have said that to me before. Like, yeah, you're British, you're English. And I'm saying, like, am I? Like, yeah, you are. And the thing is that the more I've got older, I think the bottom line is, yes, I have Indian lineage. I have to accept that and want to have that. but it must come at a balance of understanding that also alongside that there's this other thing in there. And don't, you know, that's not even including the kind of African, East African, chuck that in there as well while you're at it, you know, so that, because that certainly affects it, you know, in how I translate and around people. So I think these elements that Memoir Temporal and Nim has kind of allowed is kind of this kind of journey into these spaces that I guess pre-existed, but
I think pre-exist because there's music, poetry, rhythm, all of which you've always spoken about. They've come into your works in different ways, but it's maybe something that was just always there, so you don't look at it as being a major part of how you look at your work. And that's just seeped in with the hip-hop guys and working with Bombay Local, where they've become the center of the project itself.
You're right. Poetry, art, reading, literature, music, they've all been there. It's just that maybe I just don't look at it and disseminate it because it's just the norm. With like Bombay Local, you know what? I can visualize them guys, whether it's a performance or whether it's a video installation, in a space that people can interact with and see and hear and feel. And maybe for me, I now have a legitimate claim to be able to want to do that. And that might just come out of the fact that I'm older and I'm thinking a little bit less about what other people think and more about stuff I want to do. And whether it's successful or not, it doesn't really matter anymore. It's the fact that I want to do it.
Just to wrap up, I wanted to ask you one last question about, it again comes back to Nim and Other Stories in some way, but about how you find yourself thinking about how you're passing all of this on to Sen and Maya, about rooting yourself in the past, rooting their past, but also in the future in some way. Mm-hmm. Because very different from what you experienced and what they experienced, and at the same time being connected
with it. Yeah, I think I'm more coming to terms with who I am and the work, how I'm disseminating it and how I'm producing it. So certainly I think that's playing a major role, and that's giving me confidence in the fact of being an artist and feeling like, okay, this is what I've got to say. In part to your second bit, so for me, through my work, when they look at this idea, let's say Memoir Temporal is again a really interesting thing, or the family work is really interesting, because I'm passing on this, there's a kind of duality there. One is this idea of coming to terms with the homeland, the motherland in inverted commas, with my own kind of emphasis of how I've done that. And then obviously about living in the UK and how a family operates just within the UK, whether you take your kids down to the kind of pizza place, or whether it's them going to visit a museum show or meet friends. And so they have this kind of balance going on. But the difference obviously is the fact that my experience of growing up with my parents was this almost, they felt the necessity to put the foundation down about being Indian, South Asian. They felt a necessity that you mustn't lose that. Because if you lose that, you lose everything. What have you got if you haven't got that? My thing has been the opposite. It's been like, okay, this is a bit of you. In many ways, my hope is that I don't want my kids to feel weighted by identity. Memoir Temporal, it exposed me. There's a line in there, in the book, that we've got to do with some of the writing I've done in there, where the policeman says to his boss, foreigner here, NRI foreigner here. And I was like going, and I'm there, I can hear myself saying, nay, my Indian, he goes, nay bhai, ye foreigner here. And it hit me. And it wasn't done rudely. It was just the way it was. And it understood. But the best part of it, Vera, was this. At the end of the conversation, when he got off the phone with this thing, and my kind of identity had been kind of confirmed, He asked me if I wanted chai or Miranda, or, and he gave me my Indianness back. If that makes sense, right? That idea of what it is to be Indian. In a kind of really small kind of way, but it was like, here you go, would you like this to drink? Because it was like a gracious gesture of normality of an Indian.